Hello, everybody, and welcome back to yet another edition of the Built on the Border podcast. This is Tom Randolph with me in the dining room, aka the studio, once again. My good friend Tommy Watson. Tommy, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Had a pretty laid back weekend. It's very nice.
Yeah, and then over to my left, Mr. Broderick Johnson.
How's it going, listeners?
So, lots to cover this podcast. It was a very interesting weekend of baseball. Particularly for the Royals. They were in the national spotlight a lot, not necessarily for the most positive reasons, but we kind of have our own thoughts on how they were portrayed over these last couple of days. But we were fortunate enough to attend that Friday night thriller at Kauffman Stadium, first time facing the Oakland Athletics since we faced off against them in September in the wild card game with the thrilling comeback that the Royals mounted against the A's. So the atmosphere was pretty electric this weekend at Kauffman Stadium. Sellout crowd on Friday. In numbers to watch Billy Butler receive his American League Championship ring. And then we got to watch three Royals receive their Golden Glove awards. Eric Hosmer won a Golden Glove at first base. Salvador Perez won one for catcher. And then Alex Gordon won his fourth Golden Glove award, which they also awarded him a platinum glove, which is pretty cool. They brought them out on the big Golden Glove F-150 that they brought out onto the field. It was a cool ceremony, a special moment for those Royals, and also a special moment to honor Billy Butler. I thought it was really cool. Great to see him back. He got a standing ovation from the crowd and got people really just excited to see him back in town. I think he was excited to be back too. But as the game kind of progressed, the atmosphere grew a little tense. Late in the game, there was a potential double play ball hit into play. Royals kind of
botched it.
The ball was hit towards the mound, hit off Kelvin Herrera's foot, bounced to Moustakas. Moustakas didn't make the best play in the world. He went straight to second to try and get to Brett Lowry, third baseman for the A's, charging into second. Escobar's extended like he's just going to go for the force out, like a first baseman would from first base. And Brett Lowry, pretty questionable slide there, sliding in cleats first into the legs of Aceytis Escobar and taking him to the ground. Kind of a hold your breath moment for Royals fans as Escobar had to be helped on the field, couldn't put any weight on that knee. And then Moustakas started chirping at Lowry a little bit, and the bench is cleared, and we look like we might have another situation on our hands. The Royals have been involved in a couple of bench clearings so far this season. Tommy, what are your thoughts overall on just that play, which kind of sparked off the heated series that was this weekend?
Well, you know, to kind of fuel the fire of suspicion, that play stopped being a double play the second that ball bounced off Herrera's foot. It slowed it down and sent it off course. So Lowry should have known that there wasn't really going to be a double play in order. And maybe it was questionable for Moose to try and go to second, because when you watch the replay, that throw was not in time. Toss was not in time at all. Lowry beat the throw by a lot. The only reason he was out is because he overslid the bag. So the smart play really would have been for Moose to go to first. But, I mean, Lowry slid late. He would have been perfectly fine if he would have just slid to the other side of the bag, which is why it's suspicious.
And you know, you wonder, if he had slid to the other side of the bag, both runners would have been safe, and it would have been a good scoring opportunity potentially for the A's to put the game a little further out of reach because they were leading 2-1 at the time. You know, as the cards fell in that inning, the A's, you know, left runners on base and didn't score. The Royals escaped that inning. But it wasn't pretty, and the atmosphere the rest of the night was pretty tense. Royals mounted a great comeback late in the game, and they ended up winning the game 4-2, which was really exciting. Probably one of the better games, Royals games I've been to in terms of atmosphere and everything that was going on. But it sparked a little bit more of a heated weekend in terms of the games on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday, not really a game at all. Ventura gave up 5 runs in an inning, and towards the end of that inning, Brett Lowry comes back up to the plate. And Ventura plunked him. You know, the intent was definitely there. I don't think there's any question that he was trying to hit Lowry. But then that sparked some more issues. Ventura was immediately ejected from the game. He kind of walked off the field and had some choice words for Lowry, and that didn't go over very well with a lot of A's players. particularly the timing of it. A lot of people were saying if Ventura was going to hit Lowry, he should have done it his first time off the bat. And I can see the validity there for why he did it, for why he should have done it early on. But I still think it was a necessary play by the Royals. I think the Royals have kind of been getting bullied around and beat up this season by opposing teams. And I think that Ventura was just trying to stick up for his teammate. Again, I agree he should have done it earlier in the game when Lowry first came to the plate. But I think it was a good moment, showing kind of solidarity and showing you're going to stand up for your team. And I think that was important to show there. Brody, what are your thoughts?
I mean, it really was a heated moment because you had Redick, who hit the home run, pretty much put the game to rest. And Ventura, who we know is a bit of a hothead as a sophomore in the league. And he just kind of took it, I think, what was it, about 100 mile an hour fastball.
Yeah, right to the shoulder.
Right to the shoulder.
And, you know, Lowry deserved it. A lot of people are arguing, Lowry didn't mean to hurt him. You know, they say he sent an apology text to Alcides Escobar, and that became its own issue outside of the game.
Text Gazi.
You know, Escobar said he didn't receive it, and in fact, he thinks that, you know, he fully believes that Lowry sliding into him, you know, cleats first was intentional. So then we carry over into Sunday's action, which it was kind of a massacre of ejections that day. Started off in the first inning when Kane was plunked by Scott Kazmir,
who seemed to have complete control every other pitch.
Yeah, he seemed to have no issue controlling his pitches throughout the duration of the game, but he hits Kane, and there are no ejections. Nothing is said. No one.
A warning was issued.
There was a warning issued, but I don't think that was satisfactory for the Royal staff. Dave Island gets tossed first because he argued from the bench about the call. He gets ejected, and Yost takes issue with the fact that his pitching coach gets ejected. So Yost comes out and starts screaming at Gibson. And Greg Gibson was the guy behind the plate in that game. And a lot of people have speculated that they don't necessarily think Greg Gibson's the most equipped umpire to deal with these kind of conflicting situations. I think the Royals had a lot of merit behind arguing the fact that that was intentional. And you hear Royals players talk about, you know, after that 5-0 loss, you know, they kind of buried the hatchet. They were ready to move past it, going to Sunday, clean slate, no more issues amongst the team. Well, then you wonder, did Melvin tell Kazmir to plunk to Kane, or was that a decision that they just made within the ball club? And now this is based on the speculation that Kazmir was intentional. I think most Royals fans believe that it was. So that issue happens, and tempers kind of cool a little bit. Then in the eighth inning, guess who's back up at the plate? Brett Lowry. Kelvin Herrera, who throws heat, he took offense to how the Royals players have been treated thus far in the series, and he threw a heater in low at Lowry's legs, which missed. Subsequent pitch, there was another 100 mile an hour fastball right behind Brett Lowry, and Herrera's immediately ejected. And as he's walking off the mound in the dugout, he points at his head, which a lot of people think was Herrera saying, you know, next time it's at your head. Lowry's saying that's what he did say. I'm saying Lowry probably didn't know what the hell he was saying, because I'm guessing what Herrera said to him was probably in Spanish. And I think what Herrera was probably saying, which he attested to, was that he told him to think next time he does some Bush League stuff like that. I don't think that Herrera was trying to hurt anyone. I think Herrera is probably going to get suspended. Following that play, bench coach Don Wakamatsu, He's ejected from the game. And then, to top it all off, Alcides Escobar is ejected from the game, too.
He wasn't playing.
He was on the bench.
So, you know, it was just a mess of a situation this weekend. Who's right and who's wrong? You're going to have Oakland fans who think they were all in the right. You're going to have Royals fans who think the Royals were in the right. But I liked this series and the intensity that was displayed, because I think the Royals showed that they're tired of getting pushed around this season. This has been a season where we've been hit, I believe, 15 times? 14 times. 14. Royals have been
tied for first in the league. That's right. Still an unheard of number.
Right. We're tied for first, and, you know, people say, well, there's another team that's been hit as much, too. But I don't think the Royals have – I think the Royals have been hit intentionally almost every single time. I don't agree with the manner in which media people are trying to say why – they're getting hit. They're saying this Royals team is kind of breaking the unwritten rules of baseball, where you don't showboat, you don't celebrate, you're not supposed to have fun while you're playing the game. You're not supposed to show that you're having fun while you're playing the game. And I think the Royals showed this weekend that they're not going to just lay down and let people bully them around. They've been, you know, in the past, they've been, you know, the bottom feeders of the league, and now they're finally good. They go on this great run to get to the World Series last year. They're on a great start to the season right now. And teams are trying to bring them down, take them down a notch. And they showed this weekend through their actions and through their play that they're not going to get pushed around and they're not just going to lay down. They're going to fight. So I think it was a really good display by the Royals. Tell me your thoughts.
Well, I think they're tired of getting pushed around, and I think the popular opinion in the league right now is they're showing too much emotion for April. You know, typically it's like you're going to win some games, you're going to lose some games. Basically, you just want to not start out really badly in April, and then you pick things up as the summer goes on.
Right.
And I think people are taking offense to the fact that the Royals are coming out of dugouts on home runs. They're high-fiving on every good play they make, which they're kind of entitled to. Maybe they're taking it a little too far, but it's not enough to start hitting them with pitches and stuff.
They're having fun playing baseball, and I think that offends people. I think their exuberance, they're young guys. They're going to want to celebrate. They're going to want to, you know, do their handshakes out in front of the dugout after a home run. They deserve to. They've worked hard. They're in the moment. When you make a big play, I think you should be able to celebrate. No other league in sport, no other professional sports league in the United States prohibits, you know, quietly prohibits, you know, this kind
of
action.
The celebration of players.
Yeah. And no, also no other league allows players to police themselves on the way they do it either. You know, NBA, you see guys celebrating and, you know, playing in an exuberant manner all the time. Soccer celebrations are some of the most fun to watch. Even in football, you see these elaborate sack dances and touchdown celebrations. And you don't see anyone saying, oh, they're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to enjoy and have fun when you play the game. And, you know, I love the way the Royals play, and I love the way the fans have embraced this new team. And another thing that bothered me, too, from this weekend are people saying, well, Royals fans are finally showing their true colors. They were so courteous and fun during the World Series run now, but now they're just mean and petty, and they're sore losers and sore and poor sports. And they're show-offs when they win. I don't think that's the case at all. I think Royals fans are you know, coming at it in the same vein as the Royals players are. Look, we will welcome your team to our ballpark. We will welcome your fans. But as soon as you start pushing us around and saying nasty things and calling our players dirty when your player was the one who started off the dirty play to begin with, then we're going to fight back. And we're going to call you out on your BS. And I think a lot of Oakland fans have to realize that we're not just going to – just because you've been this poster child of, you know, unparalleled success with you know
– small market team.
With a small market team does not mean that you are the authority on how, you know, plays and team behavior is supposed to be perceived by the media. The Royals did, I think, what any other team would do, any other united, strong team would do. They stood up for themselves. They defended themselves. And I have no problem with it. And I would love to see this continue. The question now becomes – there's still 150 games to be played this season. Can they keep up this intensity through every single game? And I think that will be hard to maintain. I think players will start to get tired. They'll start to get worn out. We're already seeing injuries starting to become an issue. And suspensions, I think, will start to become an issue as well, because there's no doubt that Ventura and Herrera will probably both be suspended for their actions over the weekend.
I don't think Ventura should be suspended.
Well, some people have argued that he shouldn't be. I think some people may make the argument that because of the way he approached Lowry after the pitch, that, you know, they may throw down a suspension just to kind of rein Ventura in a little bit, because this is the second time that Ventura has been involved in benches clearing, because after Trout scored in the series against the Angels last week, you know, he approached mm-hmm. Trout and he had to be restrained by Perez. And then again, he approaches Lowry after plunking him on his way to the dugout and he has to be restrained by Perez again. And you know, benches cleared again. I think that the commissioner's office will probably pass down a short suspension, maybe 5 games, so he misses one start. And I think Herrera is probably looking at 5 to 10 games minimum. Because the one thing I know the league does not permit is throwing at guys intentionally, especially throwing behind guys, because that's when you see serious injuries happen.
Yeah, he came in high and fast. Well, that's the reason I think he'll get suspended. Yeah.
And, you know, I think people are saying he should be suspended 15 to 20 games. You're not going to suspend a guy for almost 10% of the season just because he threw at somebody. It happens all the time. So, moving into tonight's game against the Twins, which will be occurring as we record this, you know, what do you want to see from the Royals moving forward? Brody, what would you like to see from this team as we kind of make that push from April into May and into the, you know, the heated months of summer baseball?
You know, I really want to see this intensity continue. of maybe not to the kind of off-field transgressions that are going on and bench clearings. I mean, this whole Oakland series, all three games, the bench is clearing at least once.
Yeah.
And reining that in, but showing it up on the field. I mean, they have six comeback wins of their nine wins, which
yeah.
if they can keep doing that, keep the games close, this offense is going to surprise the league, and I think it's going to carry them to the playoffs.
Yeah. Tommy, what are your thoughts on us being able to maintain this hot start and this consistent level of energy moving forward into the subsequent months of the year?
Well, so since we lost two out of three of the Twins last week, I think we're starting to reach that kind of, like, our hot start's over, and now we need to start anew, you know, start winning two out of every three games,
right.
three out of four, stuff like that. And we start to need to build streaks to get ourselves a good record by the All-Star break. And what I really want to see from tonight is the Royals get to Minnesota's pitcher, Gibson, I think is his name. His season ERA, and I'm pretty sure his career ERA is not that good. His season ERA is around a 6 right
now.
Yeah.
But he has a fantastic ERA against the Royals. I think in 4 or 5 starts, he's got about a 2 ERA. And it just frustrates me that we have these players that are average at best to every other team in the MLB, but they're just so good against us. So
yeah.
I would like to see the Royals shell him tonight.
Yeah, and you know Gibson faced Volquez in our last matchup, at least this last pitching matchup against the Twins. The Twins won 3-1. Gibson, in his 4 career starts against the Royals, has a 1.38 ERA. So you know, hopefully
we
raise that a little bit in this game tonight. Twins are 5-7. I think they've shown flashes of talent this year. I think that the Central Division is going to be really tough to win.
It is.
The Tigers are playing phenomenal baseball. They're currently down 1-0 to the New York Yankees in the top of the 4th inning. Love to see the Pinstripes bring a win home against the Tigers. But it's going to be a battle. You know, Chicago has not started off well. Cleveland has not started off well. All three teams at the bottom of the American League Central are 5-7. This is a good time for the Royals to start build a little cushion above those, you know, 3, 4, and 5 teams. But it's also time to build some ground and try and stay in contention with the Tigers, because I think this is going to be a very contentious, heated rivalry throughout the season. You know, there's two teams the Royals don't like right now, and those are the Oakland Athletics and the Detroit Tigers. And I think there'll be some really great series of baseball between those ball clubs moving in this series. Or moving on this season. And I love that the Royals now have a new rival. And I think it's probably one of the more heated rivalries now in baseball, since probably the most heated since Cardinals-Reds a couple years ago when they had their
when Brandon Phillips cleated, I forgot the player's name, but was pushed up behind the home plate and went a little soccer style.
Yeah. So, again, just on this Royals season, it's been a great start. It's been a lot of high intensity. Fans are loving it. They're coming out in full force to the K. We had some record numbers this weekend. Last year in April, for this weekend, the Royals drew 62,000 fans. How many did they draw this weekend, Tommy?
I don't know the exact number, but I know it's over 100,000. And as of now, we are 50,000 fans more in attendance this year than we were at this point last year.
Yeah, and that's amazing. Those are amazing numbers. I think the exact number I saw today was almost 110,000 at the K over this weekend. I think that was around 109-something. Now, shifting gears, we're still going to talk about the Royals in a sense. Talk about Kaufman. There were 109,000 fans coming through the gates this weekend. Last October, there was a little bit of an expose, kind of a little bit of a scandal. Last November, a little bit of an expose, a little bit of a scandal when they covered Aramark's practices handling the food and beverage at both Kauffman and Arrowhead Stadium. Well, this weekend, they found mold again present in some of the vendors' kitchens out at Kauffman Stadium. And in fact, I found out last night that one of the kids of someone I played basketball with, their kid got sick from eating food at Kauffman Stadium this weekend. I don't know what's happening with Aramark. I don't know what's happening with Kauffman and Arrowhead. I don't know what's happening with the Kansas City Health Department, but something needs to be done here, because you know, I'm going to soapbox for a minute. When you have 109,000 fans coming through the doors of a stadium over one weekend, you have to consider 75% of those people are buying food, and especially on a night like Friday night. On a buck night, you probably have, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to do an estimate, but there's thousands of hot dogs being consumed that night. If there's moldy food being prepared around this stuff, if there's moldy food being served, people are going to get sick. People can die from food poisoning. It's something serious. Foodborne illness is nothing to take lightly. And I'm concerned that the Kauffman operations is not doing enough to police Aramark. Kansas City Health Department is not doing enough to police Aramark. And even after there's a whole scandal, they did a whole outside the lines report on ESPN last year. This is still an issue. I have a huge problem with it. Tommy, what are your thoughts on the Aramark scandal recently?
Well, I think the problem really lies with Aramark. I can't see how they can keep letting this happen. And then to a lesser degree, the Royals, because it doesn't seem like they've done anything about it. I don't blame the city health department that much because they're not present every night. They can't do that every night. And also, if worse came to worse and they had to shut down the concessions there, that would be awful for the team. So I don't think they would let that happen. I think they would definitely impose something big on the Royals to make that happen.
Now, there's been PR that's come out recently, which states that there were no major violations found by the Kansas City Health Department of Aramark that night. I'm wondering how much due diligence is being served because they posted a picture of a moldy hot dog bun. We personally have heard reports of people getting sick. They go back to do follow-up inspections, and they do the routine inspections, and they say they haven't found any major violations. But my question is, why are there still issues with the food? If I was Aramark from a public relations standpoint, I would nip it in the bud immediately. I would fire those people that are not adhering to those standards because, again, I just want to reiterate, foodborne illness is very serious. It can kill people, or it can leave them with significant health issues moving forward. I'm just concerned with the level of seriousness this is being taken with. I think it's up to the Royals organization and upper-level management at Aramark to resolve these issues because this cannot continue. Aramark's a huge giant in the food service industry, so it's going to be hard to kind of – I understand it's hard to have hands everywhere and keep quality up in all of your locations. But when you work in the industry of food service – quality should be your number one priority. So I would like to see, moving forward, some things be done. I don't want to hear any more issues of food safety at Arrowhead or at Kauffman because I love going to those places. I love eating the food there. You know, my waistline would probably support the fact that I love eating and drinking out at Kauffman and Arrowhead. But if it's not safe, I'm not going to do it. And it's not good for business either. You know, when I was out at Kauffman Stadium last year during the World Series run, a friend of mine who, you know, has some inside ties to the Royals told me to not drink the tap beer because they don't do a good job of cleaning out the taps and there's mold inside the taps. So I drank beer out of a can. I want to be able to go to a Chiefs game and go to a Royals game and enjoy a nice, you know, beer out of the tap. It tastes better. I'll enjoy it more. But I'm not going to do it if I'm worried about the safety of the beer that I'm drinking. So I want these issues to get resolved, and I'm sorry I soapboxed about it, but I feel like it's an issue that needs to be addressed, and I think that they need to know that fans are concerned, parents are concerned about taking their children out there and having them eat the food, and if this is a recurring issue, people are going to be less likely to take their kids out to watch a baseball game, and that's not fair. You know, I want kids to have the opportunity to go out and watch baseball. So enough about Aramark, enough about, you know, crapping on Kauffman, you know, concessions, but it's something we definitely would like to see improved moving forward. All right, so moving on, we're going to go into our greatest sports movie of all time category. Because it's been a quiet week for Kansas City sports other than the Royals, entertaining weekend. Chiefs did report to team conditioning today, I believe.
Yeah.
Justin Houston was absent, but that was to be expected. So we'll go ahead and transition to our pop culture portion of the show where we talk about greatest sports movies of all time. So this week we're going to be talking about the greatest basketball movie of all time. And I think the timing's fitting because the NBA playoffs kicked off on Saturday. So we're going to talk about those for a little bit. I particularly love this category because, you know, basketball is my favorite sport. It's the sport I love talking about the most, the sport I love watching the most. And basketball movies have had a pretty big impact on my life, particularly Glory Road, Coach Carter, Hoosiers, just name a few. So we've got our list of movies that we're going to choose from, and I'll just read those off to you guys. So for basketball movies, we kind of had to narrow the list down. Obviously, Air Bud did not make the cut, much to Brody's chagrin. but we have Coach Carter. He got Game with Jesus Shuttlesworth and Denzel Washington, who plays his estranged, incarcerated father. Hoosiers, all-time classic. Glory Road, Space Jam, which is a great movie from our childhood. Semi-Pro, the Will Ferrell comedy epic about the career of a semi-professional basketball player that plays in the American Basketball Association. White Man Can't Jump, a story of interracial friendship with Wesley Snipes and Woody Harrelson as the main characters. Like Mike, another great movie from our childhood, with Lil Bow Wow as the young boy who inherits the old shoes of former basketball great Michael Jordan and then obtains the power to play like Michael Jordan. Blue Chips, which featured some former NBA All-Stars in the cast, including Penny Hardaway and Shaquille O'Neal. And then lastly, we had to include Love and Basketball on that list as well. A great story of both basketball
and romance. And that's the last
mention of that. So, Love and Basketball, I've only seen it once. It's off my list. Blue Chips, while an entertaining movie, it was poorly acted. Shaquille O'Neal, one of his worst performances, and that's saying a lot because he was in Kazam.
Because that was so fantastic.
Semi-Pro's off the final list because it's a comedy and there's not a whole lot of basketball action. In fact, the most entertaining scene that happens on a basketball court is when they create the
alley-oop.
Okay, they did not create the alley-oop, first of all. Not the alley-oop, Brody. Let's save your basketball let's save your basketball conversations till when we're not recording, because then you can sound stupid. Next we have Space Jam on the list. That'll stay on. So our final list will be Coach Carter, He Got Game, Hoosiers, Glory Road, and White Men Can't Jump. I'm going to leave Like Mike off the list just because it is a kid's movie. I still enjoy watching it. Gets me through some rainy weekend days. It's one of those movies you can pop in early in the morning and watch before you get your day started. So, first movie we want to talk about, probably the most movie I wore out the most, the DVD I wore out the most when I was a preteen, was Coach Carter. I loved Coach Carter. Tommy, you know I loved Coach Carter as a kid.
I think there at one point there was a rumor in grade school that you watched it every single day after school. So. Yeah.
That's not true, but I did watch it quite a bit.
Right.
And every time it's on TNT, I have to tune in and watch. A great story. Samuel L. Jackson plays Coach Carter and leads an inner-city team to greatness. They don't end up winning the state championship. They lose in, I believe, a state semifinal game. But it's a really entertaining movie. Great story about the positive influence a male role model can have on kids. And he puts the emphasis on education and getting these kids out of the environment and the cycle of violence and poverty that they're currently stuck in. It's a great movie, great story, great acting, but I don't think it's the greatest basketball movie of all time. Then you've got He Got Game, where Denzel Washington's freedom hinges upon him convincing his son, Jesus Shuttleworth, to play for a particular university. I can't remember the university in the game. I believe it might have been the University of Michigan. But I can't quite remember.
I think it's called Big State. They use a fictional university.
That's right. They use a fictional university. Then we've got Hoosiers, which I think, just based on the history and the aura of that movie, is widely considered the greatest basketball movie of all time. It's a great movie. Story, Gene Hackman's character comes in and tries to turn around a failing basketball program in the great state of Indiana, where high school basketball success is kind of the most valued thing in those small
Indiana towns.
Indiana communities.
Amongst the Hoosiers.
Then we've got Space Jam, which we allowed one kid's movie onto this list. Fantastic film. Features some of the greats. Michael Jordan, Bill Murray, Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck. Hilarious movie. Still love it to this day. But I don't think it's going to be in the final three or four we're going to have. Then you've got Glory Road, which, in my opinion, is the greatest basketball movie of all time. It's the story of Texas Western head coach Don Haskins being really the first guy to heavily recruit African-American players to come play for his program. During that time, there were some prominent black athletes like JoJo White, who played for the University of Kansas. There had been Wilt Chamberlain before him. But Texas Western ultimately goes toe-to-toe with Adolph Rupp and the all-white team of Kentucky, the Wildcats, in a historic national championship matchup, which they won. And it's a great story of integrating that sport and kind of the way basketball moved in the future. So I that's going to be my tentative pick for number one. And then we have White Men Can't Jump, which is a great entertaining comedy, but again, I don't think it makes our final three top basketball movies of all time. So I'm going to posit my top three list, and then we can select from those three. If you guys have a different top three, let me know. But my top three are going to be, in no particular order, Coach Carter, Hoosiers, and Glory Road.
Wow. You left He Got Game off your top three?
I left it off there because I think the story is more about the relationship between Denzel Washington and his son, not necessarily basketball itself. I kind of wanted a combination of entertaining basketball scenes and high levels of drama in between those. I think Coach Carter has the best basketball gameplay in the movie. Obviously, the one in Hoosiers is a game of a different era where players really only dribble with the right hand and had to get completely set before they shot. So of those three, do you have a different top three?
Yes.
Okay. What are your top three?
I will go with, in no particular order, Coach Carter, Glory Road, and He Got Game.
Okay. Brody?
You know, I'm going to have to go with your three.
My three?
Your three.
Okay.
You guys are leaving out.
So our final three is Coach Carter, Hoosiers, and Glory Road. I'm going to make the case that Glory Road combines both the aspects of Coach Carter and Hoosiers. And overall, the movie is just better. I think Hoosiers was great during its time, but I don't think Hoosiers has stood up as it's gotten, as you know, the eras have passed since Hoosiers. So I'm going to go with Glory Road as the number one, just because Coach Carter is, while it is a great movie, it's not necessarily an outstanding film. I think Glory Road turned a lot of heads when it came out, not only because of the quality of the movie, but because of the subject matter as well. So I'm going to go with Glory Road as my number one. Tommy, what do you have as your number one?
Well, based on your list, I'll go with Glory Road, but I'm going to use my time right now to talk about He Got Game, because I'm just distraught that you guys both left that off your
okay.
top three.
Okay, explain to us why you believe He Got Game.
So you're right that the story is a lot about Denzel Washington and his character's relationship with his son, Jesus Shuttlesworth, in the movie. But the movie is how they bond over the game of basketball. Basketball is what brings them together because it's the one thing they have in common. And to me, it's just Spike Lee's, like, I don't know how to put it, like his love story to basketball. I think I love that movie. That's the one movie on this list that I watch it every time it's on TV, and every time I watch it, I immediately want to just go out and start shooting baskets by myself, find some people to play. I just love watching that movie.
Okay, I will point out that last week you referred to Field of Dreams as Kevin Costner's love letter to basketball. And now you're referring to He Got Game as Spike Lee's love letter to basketball.
It's a common theme among
Tommy,
people who like sports.
Have you been writing love letters?
Maybe.
He seems really caught up in the love letter theme recently. Okay, so we got a little write-in here for He Got Game. And, you know, looking at re-examining my list, He Got Game is probably a better movie than Hoosiers. But I think the historical significance of Hoosiers is why it gets in. You know, growing up as a kid, that's what the movie your dad always wanted to show you was Hoosiers. Your dad's like, this is a great sports movie, watch this. In a lot of the same way, people think that Rudy is the best football movie of all time. And it might not really stand up against the newer ones, but at the time, it was the best football movie. So I'm going to stick with Glory Road, although I really appreciate your impassioned argument for He Got Game. And in fact, I'll revamp my final three. I'll go with Glory Road, Coach Carter, and He Got Game. That way, for your sake, He Got Game, if it does not win today, can move on as a potential write-in. Now, we already have Sandlot as a potential write-in later on in the bracket. And I will say that I'm still bothered because I did not realize that I actually should have won because Sandlot should have gone in because we had 2-1, but I didn't realize it at the time. So, Brody, now it's up to you ultimately. You have to decide between Glory Road and He Got Game. Best basketball movie of all time, go.
And you took off the one I was going to choose, which is Hoosiers.
So
nobody wins.
Too bad. Choose between those two.
No, well, I'll make an impassioned case for Hoosiers.
Okay, go ahead.
I mean, it's basically Texas football. That passion of small towns pretty much putting their heart and soul for this team. But instead, it's basketball in Indiana. And just Gene Hackman trying to salvage this team, deal with an alcoholic coach, the drama of all of that. And they end up winning in, in Butler's Stadium?
Hinkle Fieldhouse,
yeah. I mean, the history, and also, I mean, we've all seen it. I believe everyone's seen that. It is one of the classic basketball movies.
Okay, that's fine.
I think we just need to leave off Coach Carter.
Okay, fine. We cut Coach Carter from the list. We're gonna go at this at a whole new angle.
No one voted for it as the top one. So.
Okay, so top three: He Got Game, Hoosiers, Glory Road. We're all split down the middle here. Brody's got Hoosiers. I've got Glory Road. Tommy's got, he got game. So how do we decide this? Here's how we decide it. Each of us will take a piece of paper and write in our top three in the order that we perceive those. We tally those votes. First place gets 3 points. Second place gets 2 points. Third place gets 1 point. And that's how we will decide. We will take a short break and we'll be right back and we will reveal to you our answers literally in just a second. So we're back. That was really fast. After tallying the votes, Glory Road wins with 7 total points, beating out He Got Game and Hoosiers. So my choice wins. I feel really good about this. And I think we learned this is how we should decide it from now on. We'll do a point system. So Glory Road advances to the ultimate tournament of greatest sports movies of all time. And that's pretty much going to wrap up the show for today. I just want to remind all of our listeners that next week, on Sunday evening, we will be releasing our draft special, where we will cover all things Chiefs draft. We'll do a lot more research than we normally do on the show, so we can bring you the most insight, analysis, and opinions that we can, the best possible that we can. And we'll do a full, hopefully a full hour if we have enough content to deliver to you then. So we hope you enjoyed the show this evening. We always try to keep this fresh and interesting for you guys. If you do have any thoughts on how we can make the show better or thoughts on things you'd like to have us discuss, please submit them, tweet them at us, comment on the blog below. You can reach us at builtontheborder@gmail.com or on Twitter at BorderKC. We really love doing this show, and we hope people that listen to it love it too. And if you love it, spread the word and share us with your friends because we want to get more listeners too. And maybe someday get paid to do this. Highly unlikely. Sometime maybe we get paid to do this. What do you think, Tommy?
That'd be really fun if that happened.
That would be fun. So listen to us so we can get paid to do this. So again, thanks for listening. And as we exit tonight, we're going to leave you with the new single by one of our favorite bands, Mumford & Sons, with their recently released single. Came out this morning called Snake Eyes. We hope you guys enjoy it. Tune in next week for the 2015 Chiefs Draft Special. Have a great week, guys. Take it easy. Peace.
Let it flow, this cruelty of youth as you fall again, alone in the compromise of truth. It's in the eyes, I can tell you will always be danger. We had it tonight. Why do you leave it open? Your feet.